The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, this is Stephen Hines, author of Zombie Fabulous, Rebirth Defect, and Valedictorian USA. And you, my friends, are getting your skulls crushed by the pile driver of John Orlando with his PBD cast in your face.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 239. I hope you are doing well, and I hope that you are safe and healthy, and I would like to thank you for checking out this episode, which features a conversation with my guest, Antonio Hernandez. Antonio is a Washington, D.C.-based filmmaker who created a project called Indelible. And to be completely honest, it's kind of hard to describe Indelible. It's like a hybrid short film docuseries. All 8 episodes deal with musicians and artists in the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area. And they run from about 10 minutes to about 15 minutes. And we're going to talk about those episodes, but we're also going to focus on the special edition that Antonio did that's a little bit longer, and it's entitled Southside Suplex. Now, this one is about Washington, D.C. independent wrestler Trish Adora. Antonio interviewed her and chronicled some of her trials and tribulations and went to a couple of matches of hers. And it's a really great story, so I'm very happy that Antonio took a little bit of time out of his schedule to sit down and chat with me. And so that will be coming at you here in just a minute, but I got to take care of a few other miscellaneous loose ends. Like, for an example, reminding you about a great sponsor of this podcast, World's Greatest Comics. They are located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they have tons of comics from every single era, whether you're talking about the Golden Era, Silver Era, Bronze Era, or even the Modern Era. But they also have graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, and various other collectibles. You need to stop by the store and check it out. And on top of that, you have more incentive to check out the store, especially on June 27th, because there's going to be a special appearance by Daryl Banks, the man that co-created Kyle Rayner in the 90s for Green Lantern is going to be at the store. He's going to be hanging out from noon to 3. He's going to be doing autographs, doing commissions. So you need to stop by and say hello to Daryl. And of course, check out the store. So if you have any questions or concerns, you can check them out online, wgcomics.com, or go to their Facebook page, which is, of course, at WG Comics, and you can get all the details on the store. Additionally, I need to remind you that every single Monday night at 9:30, you can check out the PVD cast on the live broadcast through Redline Radio. And if you want to do that, just simply go to redlineradiollc.com or check out their Facebook page, also under Redline Radio LLC. Or if you're an Android phone user, you can download an app. That's right. The app is called Redline Radio LLC. Download it, and you can take the station with you wherever you go. So you can not only hear the PVD cast, but you can also hear the Canned Air podcast, What's Your Opinion, The Talk, The Scoop, The Hot Tag Wrestle Corner, Dueling Aces. There are tons of shows and tons of great music on Redline Radio. So definitely check out RedlineRadioLLC.com and enjoy, man. Enjoy all the great shows and all the great music. So with that being said, I'm going to take a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I will be back to talk to Antonio Hernandez, the man behind Indelible. All right, ladies and gentlemen, joining me this afternoon, all the way from Washington, D.C., Mr. Antonio Hernandez. Antonio, how you doing, man?
I'm all right, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule to sit down and chat with myself and the listeners. You're the man that created Indelible, which is a hybrid short film series. Is that the best way to kind of describe it?
Yeah, like just how you put it. It's a web series, but it's also a film. The episodes are online. But before everything shut down, what I would do is put together edits of the film using footage I put out, footage that I've been working on, stuff that is just for the film. And every time I've shown the film, I recut it so it's different each time. So I take out stuff, put in new stuff that I've been filming, do extended scenes of the web series. So it's like a, like you said, a hybrid kind of project.
You know, and I'm going to ask you about all those re-edits here in a few moments, because there, I have a question regarding that. But let's maybe fill in the listeners a little bit about you. You are kind of a self-taught filmmaker, correct?
Yeah, for the most part. I got into photography in 2009. I did a study abroad trip to Costa Rica to kind of improve my Spanish. And one of the kind of extra classes you could take was an ecological photography class. And I only took it because it included two extra trips or excursions. So I was like, you know, it's a good chance to just do some more traveling. And I kind of just fell in love with photography. Then the camera I had video, HD video. So I just got into videography and documenting things. And it's not something that I really thought that I would do. You know, I grew up watching like documentaries and just watching a lot of TV. But I kind of just picked it up, and that's how I got here now. And mostly self-taught. I've learned on a couple different jobs. Like I used to work with Voice of America in DC. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it was just kind of just figuring out and learning how to edit, learning how to shoot, learning how to do interviews, learning how to just create projects from start to finish.
I appreciate that fact, man. I mean, because this podcast, DIY, I have no idea, man. That's why I dig that. So your first web series, and it also was a blog, was called Electric Llama. Can you tell us a little bit about what that blog, what that film project was all about?
Well, yeah. So Electric Llama is the blog. The first series was actually called Garnish. Okay. So I started that maybe three and a half years ago. So my blog was just where I would just put stuff I was like doing, like taking photos of shows, just different things I was doing. And I just came up with the name because my family's from Peru. So llama is an animal from that region, and electric just means digital. So I just needed to come up with something really quick. And that kind of just became like the name I would use like on Twitter or IG or whatever. I just made it the name of my blog. And then Garnish was originally supposed to be a zine. But then once I got into the weeds of it, I realized like I don't know print that well, but I do know video. So I decided to kind of pivot and just make it a web series. It's kind of similar to what I do with Indelible, but it just wasn't as focused and as polished. But I was like interviewing artists. I was doing similar things, doing interviews, going to shows. I actually did a wrestling episode for that series too, about Nova Pro Wrestling, which was a promotion based in Northern Virginia. I don't know if you're familiar.
I'm familiar with a lot of East Coast talent from Ring of Honor, and that would go down and pop in on several of their shows. Yeah, and they're defunct now, aren't they?
Yeah. They went under. They had a controversy.
Okay.
You know, similar thing with you know, pro wrestling. You know, I think they're just accusations of like people not getting paid, and you know, it's that's the indie kind of, that's how a lot of stories you know, promotions end. But that was cool. That was like my first kind of time doing something that was like a longer piece. I think that was like 20 minutes, and all the wrestlers I met were cool. Like got to talk to Sanjay Dutt and a few other guys there, and that was really cool. And then I kind of just started doing like more freelance video work for different like organizations and artists and stuff like that.
Well, let's talk about Indelible. Could you maybe describe what that series is all about?
Yeah, so Indelible is a hybrid documentary project. So basically, there's a web series with episodes online, but there's also a film project. So the subjects have been mainly musicians up until recently, musicians in the DC area or Baltimore area too. The film itself comprises material from the episodes, but also includes stuff that was in progress at the time and stuff I left just for the film. Because I want the episodes to be fairly short. I think most of them are under 15 minutes. Most of them are under 10 minutes or around that. But I also wanted to create a viewing experience that makes people want to come and see the film. A lot of the artists and people that will come are local. So I wanted people to come together and like view it in person, because I think that's really important. I know that's hard now to see something together. You can do it virtually, but I think there's just a really good element of watching the material with other people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just decided, you know, I had the technology to do it. I do everything, all the editing off my laptop, and it's fairly easy if I want to cut something, if I want to make a re-edit. It's really simple to do. I mean, it's a lot of work, obviously. It's not easy, but I thought it's simple in theory, and I think it's something interesting that I could do to make people want to see it. And there's some, like I said, there's footage that I leave just for the films, and I feel like that's a way for me to kind of not only just market, but also kind of just show kind of the appreciation for people coming. I wanted to give them a reason to come and a reason to talk about it. And, you know, after I had 4 screenings last year, so I wanted people to kind of discuss, you know, what did they see this time? You know, what was, you know, did edits and did additions or subtractions kind of change the context of things?
And what's been the feedback?
I mean, the feedback has been really good. The artists are really appreciative. Some of the artists I've known for like years. Some are friends of mine. Some I've known maybe less than a year. Some I met through the process. But the feedback from the screenings have been really great. People just really appreciated seeing the music scene kind of in that way. You know, I grew up watching like Behind the Music and MTV Diary and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So I try my best to give the best kind of production quality as like a one-man team kind of thing. The other thing is that I focus on women and LGBTQ performers, and majority of them are Black. And that's not something that I kind of put all over the place, but that's something that's like a constant. But I also, you know, I wanted to do it in a way where I'm not exploiting labels. I'm not making it. I want people to focus on the individual stories and seeing how those connect.
Yeah, one thing that I would like to talk real quick about is the style of the project. Yeah, it's shot all in black and white. We talked off air. You have subtitles already in those scenes. And there's like a, for lack of a better term, a universe. Because as you watch episode 1, for an example, with Odd Mojo, that performer shows up a few episodes later in a totally different, like, way, not as the focal, but as like part of the backdrop that still gives you this idea of this sense of continuity among all these different artists. So real quickly, was that style something that you did purposely, like in terms of shooting it the way you shot it and kind of woving in all these different artists in this one kind of world, so to speak?
That I think kind of just happened as time went along. When I started it, I didn't intend to do a series. Basically, this was October of 2018. And by that time, I hadn't really been doing a lot of like personal projects. I've been doing a lot of stuff, just like work stuff, work projects. And it was kind of at a time where I was like, I wasn't feeling myself as far as creatively and kind of professionally. I was like, I was at a point where I was like, I was looking at my gear and I was like, I was kind of wanted to just sell it off and kind of just do something totally different. But I decided, a friend of mine, Mojo, who you mentioned, she had a show at Songbird, which is a a really, really great place in the Adams Morgan neighborhood of DC. And I saw she was opening up for a rapper from Brooklyn named Jungle Pussy. And I was like, hey, I'll kind of want to just do like a behind the scenes kind of thing where I kind of get you before and after the performance as well, in addition to getting some of the performance. And then kind of what I got from there, and I think you mentioned that you watched it, I kind of saw that I just got kind of like this, just this raw, just like genuine, like she mentioned, you know, just feeling how, you know, she's been waiting for a moment like this, you know, seeing her name next to like a person like she really respected, just kind of the stuff like after as well. And then I believe that was on Wednesday, and then Friday I went to Starbucks like Friday night, and I kind of just edited I think the trailer, and it kind of came up with like the concept then within like a couple hours. And I just needed something. I didn't really intend to become a series, but I just thought like, okay, this is kind of something that I think that could work. I just thought about, you know, this is something that no matter where her career goes, like she wouldn't forget this. So that's why I came up with the name Indelible. And then with the black and white, I just, you know, if I was going to do different places and go to different kind of venues and places with different lighting, making everything black and white would kind of just eliminate some of those things, especially like when you go to concerts and venues, there's a lot of like neon, there's a lot of bright colors. And I kind of just wanted to be the focus on the framing and composition and on the subject without kind of just the extra of the literal, you know, the bright lights and things like that.
Yeah, that's really smart. I never thought about that. That, yeah, every concert venue has its own different lighting rig and different distractions, so to speak, for lack of a better term, if you're a filmmaker. I never thought about that.
Yeah, it's just because I was, you know, just going through them a lot. And then Songbirds, actually, for example, their lighting scheme is it's a lot of like deep reds and blues, but some have like pinks and purples and things like that. And when you mentioned the universe, is that another thing I realized in DC and Baltimore, and there's some kind of like partnerships and cooperation between them, but they're like people that frequently collaborate. So I kind of wanted to put that in there too. And you kind of see it more if you go to a screening, is that you see people kind of show up, even if they're not performing. You'll see people in the studio together, or you'll see people just helping each other get ready for a performance. So I kind of wanted to show like the different communities that are kind of been popping up and how they kind of support each other, you know, both as performers, but also just like as people and as friends, you know, because it takes a lot, you know, to just have a performance and having an outfit, make sure sound is good, making sure just everything is together.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about probably maybe the three most impactful episodes of Indelible. First of all, they're all great. And I mean that. I watched them all yesterday as part of my research. But there were three that really, for me, kind of made an impact. And the one is, of course, Southside Suplex, because as everyone knows, I'm a huge wrestling nerd, you know. So that one we'll talk about in a minute. But I'd like to talk about the other two. And I feel like these two really resonated with me because there is just such a strong element of here's how people really connect through music. And that is episode two with Black Folks Don't Swim, because just all the different band members and how they just kind of fit together, for lack of a better term, like just that human interaction. And even though they're different. And in fact, I believe Sweet, like how she talked about like all the different personalities and all the different talents and skills and how it all merged together. That one really, really spoke to me. And the last one did as well. Jenna Camille, her connection to her teacher, I thought was really, really captivating. I felt those two really, really stood out for me because I'm a fan of that kind of, not only is the art great, but look at how the human dynamic is in those stories.
Yeah, thank you. Those were both really fun. I met that band. It was funny because I met two members of that band earlier that summer, maybe around August. I was they were at a place called R Street Studio, and there was a studio session for women or film musicians. And Sweet was there, and it was, I kind of was just kind of getting like an overview of the process. So I wasn't really chopping it up too much with anyone in particular. But then I was kind of thinking about like, what do I want this project to look like? And then I, like on Instagram, I found out like they have a band. So I checked the band out and I was like, okay, this might be a good subject. So I hit them up. They said they had, they were practicing for a show that was happening, I believe that Friday. Yeah, it was a Friday night show and they were practicing that Wednesday or Thursday before. So I met Sweet. I had met their keyboard player before as well. Or keyboard player, actually, she was at the studio session. And yeah, I told her I wanted to come down. So yeah, I just met the rest of the band at University of Maryland where they're performing, where they're rehearsing. And that was just like a really fun session. I think the practice was like 3 hours. So I stayed for the 3 hours to get that. And then, yeah, that performance, which I thought it was just so sick. I wish I could put like the whole show in there. But yeah, the performance was sick, especially in that interview that Sweet gave after the performance, which is, I thought was just incredible. And then with Jenna, I've known for a few years now, kind of just through the DC music scene. And we just were talking and she told me about the school that she went to. And I remember just walking past the school because my girlfriend actually lives around the corner from where that school is.
Okay.
So I've walked by it a couple times and I kind of just had no idea what it was about, who was there. And I was like, hey, that would be cool. I haven't done something like that, but that for me, I thought it would be kind of a cool kind of stretch and kind of expansion to kind of bring all these other people into it and get a little bit of history. You know, I kind of wanted to also include all these other factors and relationships and the human dynamic, like you mentioned, into the project. And her music teacher was just very, very gracious with this time. Like you saw in the episode, he kind of just went through like how he like teaches music, like his kind of philosophy on music and showing me like his art, Jenna plays some songs. But yeah, those were like really fun.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Antonio for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. It's the one-stop shop for all of your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, collectibles, comic book supplies, back issues, basically anything you need for your fandom, they've got. Now they're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, and you can find them on the internet. Just look for wgcomics.com or they're on Facebook. Just search for @WGComics. And no matter how you interact with them, let them know that you heard about the store from me right here on the PVD cast. Ah, cool. Well, let's talk about Southside Suplex. It is maybe kind of the 9th episode, would you call it that? Or is it kind of its own standalone, or do we need to put a label on it?
Yeah, I just called it like a special, like a special edition. You know, you have, you know, Mountain Dew has, you know, Mountain Dew, you know, you have Baja Blast. This is like Code Red, Mountain Dew Code Red, you know what I mean?
Okay. All right. I like that.
Yeah. This special was originally, edition. Yeah, a special edition because originally it was going to be, I wanted to do a feature, but obviously with the pandemic and everything, filming got cut short. And so what I realized, you know, all I had was that interview and that show footage from that show I shot and the scenes at the end of the video, at the end of the film. So, you know, I was like, you know, as time went on, I was like, I don't think things are going to go back to where they were for a long time. So I decided why not just do a short with what I have and when and if things go back to normal, then we can figure out what to do from there. So I hit up the wrestling companies that she had matches with. And I think most of them, except one or two, got back to me, letting me use the footage.
Well, I'm going to interrupt for a minute. Let's back up and tell folks who we're talking about. We kind of jumped the gun. It's all right, yeah, man. So, we're talking about a professional wrestler out of the Washington, D.C. area named Trish Adora. And she is currently the Pan-African World Diaspora Champion. And you kind of chronicle her career and kind of the ups and downs a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, it's exactly how you put it. I ended up just doing a short. It was supposed to be a feature. So basically what I did was took the interview and show footage I had that I shot before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. This was in February. So this was actually before the shutdowns happened. And I looked up all her previous matches that I could find on the internet and just hit up the promotions, got the matches that I thought kind of told the story with the interview that I had. And yeah, just put together kind of like her career in a nutshell. So it's like basically 20 minutes is how she got into wrestling, how she got to Florida where she trained and training with the Dudley Boys at Team 3D Academy, then making her way back to DC and her journey on the independence in the area on the East Coast, but then also in California. And she also mentions going abroad as well. She was actually on an episode of NXT last year or a couple years ago. But yeah, I just kind of took what I had and what I can find and put together to a short because I knew that it was just something that I just wanted to do. And I've been working from home and I kind of just wanted something where I can just spend my time and kind of just do something, just focus on it. And like editing video for me gets kind of meditative after a while. So if I can find a zone, I'm good to go. I don't know if it's the same way with you, like editing audio and stuff like that. But I can just do it. I can kind of just do it and get lost in it for hours. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and that's just what I did. And I finished it in about like 4 days, 4.5 days.
So how did you originally discover Trish and her story? Was she one of those people from Nova Pro, the previous story, or was it just some other type of interaction that you had that you met Trish?
So I met Trish the day of the show where she won that title.
Oh, okay.
I found out about that show. So all those photos in the film are photos mm-hmm. that I had the show. I found out about the show, which is on a Saturday. It's actually Saturday, February 15th, because Valentine's Day was the day before. So that morning I went to go get coffee at a coffee shop in DC. And I just happened to notice the flyer for the show. But I remember that something was missing. It might have been the bell time, or it might've been start time or address, or something was missing. And I just noticed they kind of had a picture of Trish and a couple other people on the flyer. And I thought this was cool. So I was like looking on Instagram, trying to find information. So I DM'd the promotion PAWDDC at Fight Club. And then I DM'd Trish trying to figure out more information. And I was like, well, once I found out everything, as far as like the time and everything, I was like, okay, well, I'll just go and check it out, bring my camera, get some pictures. I was like, I have nothing to do until later that night. Because at the time I was taking photos for a club every Saturday night in DC. And that didn't start till like 11:30. So I was like, I'll go to the show, check it out. And I was just like floored. Mm-hmm. Show was really dope. All the matches were really dope. And I was just like really impressed by Trish because I haven't heard of her before that day. But there was just something about like her performance, her attitude, the way she wrestled, kind of like how the match was laid out. And there were a lot of spots, but there was a lot of like storytelling. It wasn't kind of just spot, 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 spot. And the crowd was just so into her. I remember just seeing like kids were into her, just like adults, everyone. She just kind of had something about her. And I was like, this would be cool. Cause I hadn't done something wrestling related in a long time. So I thought this would be cool. And I just had a feeling that she had a good story. Mm-hmm. And so after the event, there was literally less than 15 minutes for them to break down and get everyone out. Cause they had to be out like soon after the event. And so I came up to her, I was like, hey, I'm Antonio, I'm a filmmaker. I'm not a weird guy. I know I sound like this. I'm a filmmaker, like a becoming filmmaker or something from the area. I want to do a story about you if you're interested. You know, this was like all in like 2 minutes. because she was also taking pictures with kids and her family mm-hmm. and stuff. I was like, I took a bunch of pictures. I could send you those and maybe we can, you know, we can meet up to talk about it. So she was like, cool. So I was like, hey, I'm going to DM you. And just so you know, now I'm just like trying to emphasize, like, I'm not like some, you know what I mean?
No, I understand because, you know, I joke that sometimes when you interact with young ladies, it's like, no, I legitimately have a podcast. It's not like a pickup line. This is not, you know.
Yeah.
This is legit. So that's why I'm chuckling. Like, I understand. I empathize.
Yeah. And just because I know you've been to live wrestling events, so you kind of know.
Yeah.
You know, they do too much. Or they just get whatever. I was like, hey, like, I just kept it. And that's how I always do it. You know, I always approach people and talk to people. I was just like, I know, like, I'll DM you. And then we found a time to meet up, I think, a week and a half later. We just met up at a coffee shop near where she lives in D.C. Yeah, we just had some coffee. Kind of, we just talked. Yeah, we just had a really good conversation. We just talked about, like, our careers. We talked about like wrestling and we both felt like similar, like we're similar in age. We both kind of, for us, like she wanted to focus now on rest. She felt like she was at a time where she wanted to really give a lot of time and energy to wrestling. And I wanted to kind of do the same thing with storytelling. So we kind of connected. And I think the week after that, the week or so after that is when I did the interview at her place. And then, which was like on a Thursday, I believe. And then that Saturday is when she had that show at Butch versus Gore. And that was her first title defense. And so I was able to get a lot of that show from just her getting to the venue, warming up, laying out the match, after the match and everything.
So when you get a chance to, because I know you mentioned that you wanted to kind of make this a more thorough feature about Trish. And I know in doing my research, you've stated that obviously we have to wait till COVID situation is taken care of and all that. Is there anything that you would like to cover in a longer version of Trish's career? Is there some topics that you feel like really should be discussed and discovered, but didn't get the chance to, obviously, because of some of the parameters that were placed on you, you know, when you're making this first cut of the film?
Yeah, a big one was training. So now recently she has started training at Ring of Honor's gym in Maryland. So I was trying to get to that gym before everything shut down. So definitely like wrestling training, also kind of like gym training. We didn't mention it, and I do have interview pieces with her talking about wrestling men and everything like that. With this, I kind of didn't want to go into it because I wanted it to be fairly short, and I kind of just thought it would be cool if that's just something that we don't even have to explain, that she wrestles mostly men. But I think with the feature, that's something I would go into as well. Mm-hmm. And I think I may lean a little bit more into when she discusses, like, you know, how it is with her family and stuff like that. There are certain things like her uncle, I believe, was at that show where she won the title. And she mentioned to me that was the first time he had seen her perform. At the end of the film, you see she's standing with a guy at her merch table, and that's actually her brother, who came down from, I believe, Boston to come see her perform.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, there's certain aspects that I put in there. And I honestly, those are kind of more really just for her. Mm-hmm. So in the film, you know, I kind of just wanted just some things that, like, you know, unless you're like her or like her family, you wouldn't really pick up on. But those are kind of things I just wanted to put just for her. But I think for the feature, I would kind of go into that and kind of have interviews with her family members. I had an interview with her friend that she does mention. I didn't end up using it just for time. But her friend just talks about like how Trish was just really into wrestling and how she just feels so proud of her following her dream. And she talks about, like, you know, she just runs the merch table to help Trish, and kind of that's just, you know, how it works out. And, you know, and that's one of the things when you're an independent artist and you're not coming from, you know, lots of connections and things like that, you know, you need people to help you out and do whatever,
So I know you know a lot about wrestling. You're a big fan, and we're going to talk about your fandom in a few minutes. But was there one thing you learned about wrestling while filming Trish that maybe you didn't know about beforehand?
I think what was interesting with this is that on the day of the event, they actually had like health screenings, essentially. They had like blood pressure and stuff like that taken. I don't know if I knew or even thought about that, but I thought it was interesting that they kind of had that. And this was probably like 5 p.m. No, maybe 3 or 4 p.m. where they had those. So I thought it was really interesting that they kind of just had like those kind of health screenings, like little hours before the event to make sure the performers are in good health to perform that night.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about your fandom. So you have obviously been a huge wrestling fan. Can you maybe remember how you got into it?
I think I just got into it just watching it on TV. Okay. I was watching just both WWF and WCW. And I would watch like Raw and Nitro and then Thunder. There were also times where like a family friend who's basically like an uncle to me, he would sometimes record pay-per-views on VHS and he would give them to me. Because the pay-per-views were expensive, like $60 or whatever.
Right, right.
So yeah, we couldn't justify spending $60, but my mom's friend, he would record those. So I remember, I think one of them was like maybe like a Bash at the Beach was one of them. I think one of the World War III that WCW did. Oh,
three rings.
Where they had the three rings. I remember seeing that. I thought that was sick. But yeah, I was just watching that. And then I got older and I got really into ECW, especially like in middle school.
You know, I'm a big ECW fan too. I was back in the day. So I'm always curious when I meet an ECW fan, what captivated you about ECW?
It was weird. And I remember like, it's maybe around eighth grade that I got really into it. I look back on it now, I'm just like, man, this was a lot of crazy stuff. But for me, it was just like, I wasn't really as much into like the ultra violence as some of the stuff like Sabu and like the barbed wire matches or like, but they just kind of had an array of things and they would kind of put people together that kind of didn't make sense, but it also didn't always have to make sense. I don't know. Like you had people like Amish and Amish Roadkill and Danny Doring, which was so random. But to me, like it was sick because you would see like Amish, he was actually the more high flyer because he would like jump up on the top rope, you know. But you also had people like Tajiri, you know, RVD, of course, Sabu, Super Crazy. I thought FBI was hilarious.
Yes.
You know, everyone pretending that they were Italian. You know, they obviously weren't Italian. You know, the Dudley Boys. So even if at the time I didn't really appreciate some of the more complex stories of like Dreamer and things like that, I definitely at the time I appreciate and I thought it was really interesting kind of the combinations and like what they would do. And what I appreciated more as I got older and learned about it is like how they really emphasize the strengths of wrestlers.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like they know Taz was like 5'7" or something into like this monster.
Yes.
I mean, he was like, he's definitely gifted, but that wouldn't have happened anywhere else. Really. They tried, they almost said WWF, but they made him like a legit monster. You know, they had Rhino who just going through people. They had RVD just be himself and just be like this cocky, like just ridiculously athletic. And they had Sabu in there. I feel like they just really, they did the most, I feel like, with what they had. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really appreciated. And sometimes what they had was just kind of odd and random, like I mentioned with Amish and Doring, and it still kind of worked. Mm-hmm. And some of it didn't need a whole complex like background. Like I don't think you really need a lot of reason for just this big Amish guy and Danny Doring to be together, but I thought it was, you know, really entertaining. And even for someone like Kid Cash, who I thought was really cool, like he didn't do much but fly around, but that was sick. But you know, it's also the first time that besides WCW, seeing like some of the Lucha Libre or seeing some like the Japanese guys, like seeing Hayabusa in that tag match with RVD and Sabu.
Yeah.
I think, you know, later on I got into like DDT in New Japan.
So who are some of your favorite wrestlers you really love to watch?
I would say like when I was younger, my favorite was like the Hardy Boys, Undertaker, RVD, Sabu, like Rey Mysterio, Stone Cold, The Rock. I would say currently, I like Pentagon, Felix, Jericho has still been one of my favorites, Kurt Angle. I really like Kenny Omega now, John Moxley. Yeah, there's a lot. Okada, of course, I really like. I like Tanahashi. I like a lot of people in New Japan. I'm still learning all the performers in DDT because I've been watching that a lot on DDT Universe.
Have you, just out of curiosity, since you mentioned DDT, have you checked out Vice had a show called The Wrestlers?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Did you check out the DDT one? The episode on DDT?
And it was really cool because I started getting into DDT maybe like a year and a half ago. And so, you know, they don't have English commentators or anything. So what I would do is there's a blog that's in English. And what they would do is kind of like have summaries, and they would have like previews and results, but they also bring context. So I would kind of like read those in addition to like watching the shows. So I will read the preview of the show. Then after the match, you know, or between the matches, I would read the blog to give the results and give the context of like what's happening. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't really need that for everything, but you know, for the promos or things like that, storylines. But yeah, I thought it was just really interesting. And I think for me, DDT kind of is, encompasses all the stuff I kind of want. Then, you know, there's like comedy, there's like very, very athletic, very like technical matches. But they also have a lot of just ridiculous things, like having matches in like a campground or like a water park or on a monorail train and things like that. They just had like these ridiculous ones. They have they had a weapons Royal Rumble. So every minute someone came out with a different weapon, and it's like one of my favorite matches of all time.
It certainly is a very unique style of wrestling. I will give you that. It is something that I don't know if our descriptions could do it justice.
Yeah, like it's I don't know. I think once you watch it, they have a certain charm to it.
Right. Well. Right.
There's a certain charm that is hard to explain. Like when you have the the match at the campground, for instance, there's one time, like maybe three quarters of the way through the match, there's a guy dressed as Rambo, and he pops out and he's like with the gun, and he's like fake shooting, I'm doing air quotes, the other wrestlers, and they sell it as if they've been shot. And so it's just like very ridiculous. And I think in the show, in the Vice show, he kind of says it's performance art. They make allusions or references to being performance art. And I think when I talked to Chris about it, and I mentioned that it's like anime come to life. In the same way that wrestling for me is kind of like comic books or those kind of stories come to life. What DDT is doing is just so on another level. And I personally think it's like maybe it's just because I'm a wrestling nerd, but there's just something about like what they did and how they kind of expanded things into literally they expanded to like another landscape. And it's just like, for me personally, I think it's like one of the best things. It's one of like the best things I've ever seen. Like that's like, I don't know if there's many things better than watching a wrestling like battle royal on a monorail filled. There are people on the monorail, which is ridiculous. Like they had an audience. And the match ended at a subway stop, at a monorail stop.
People just going to work, man, and all of a sudden the battle royal starts, you know.
Someone does like a splash off the ladder at a monorail station, which is just, it's crazy. It's like, you know, it's a good escape. But I think, you know, like I said, DDT is kind of just an amalgamation of everything. And I think ECW and wrestling has been really influential in kind of like how I see storytelling and, you know, mm-hmm. highlighting the strengths, doing what I can with the faults or my shortcomings, but really doing the most with like the strengths that I have. And that's the kind of philosophy I take with my projects.
Well, Antonio, we're getting up there time-wise, so let's let everybody know where they can find you online. So you want to give your social media website information and all that?
Yeah, sure. So my Instagram is Electric Llama. That's Llama with two L's. My Twitter is Electric_Llama. The Instagram for the Indelible Project is @IndelibleLife. And then the website for Indelible is Indelible.life. So you can see all the episodes, including the Trisha Dorr special. You can see all of them on YouTube. And you can, just stay tuned for the project and see what else I'm coming up with next.
I was going to ask, do you have any other projects on the horizon?
Yeah, so for Indelible, I have a couple episodes that I want to finish. Actually kind of have like two or three that I want to finish. And I think I'm going to go ahead and work on doing an edit of the cut and do like a virtual screening.
Okay.
Which I haven't done before because I wouldn't put the, or I haven't released any of the film screenings. But I think depending on how time goes, I might consider doing like a virtual screening. But definitely I want to put a couple more episodes out in the next few months.
Cool. Well, Antonio, thank you, man, for stopping by and chatting with me today, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I will be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Antonio Hernandez, talking about Indelible and our fandom of professional wrestling, Trisha Dora, and a ton of other things. And if you want to check out the project, I'm just going to plug the website here real quick. There are links to all of Antonio's social media, but just go to the website, www.indelible, and that's spelled IndelibleLife. It's a little bit of an unusual website URL, so I'm going to post it over in the links page on pvdcast.com so that if you forgot it or you didn't write it down, you could just go over, click the links tab, and it'll be listed right there for you. All right, at this time, I need to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you would like to do so. You can always shoot me an email. My email address is johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can leave me a message through the Facebook page of the PVDcast. That, of course, is @PVDcast. Instagram, I'm there as well, under PVDcast. And you can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is PVDMVP. And don't forget, you can check out the PVDcast through a variety of different avenues. Probably the easiest one is just to go to PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly. But this podcast is also available through all the major podcasting platforms, such as Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pod Paradise, SoundCloud, Spotify. I think I said Spotify already. Anyways, just basically anywhere you get podcasts, it should be there. And if you need to, just search for PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name, PVDcast John Orlando, and it should populate. And when you do listen, make sure that you subscribe so you never miss an episode, and you also rate and review. That helps me out tremendously in the algorithm. And quite frankly, tell some folks about it. I would appreciate that as well. And I almost forgot one final reminder, as I like to do. Every Monday night, 9:30, you can hear the PVDcast on Redline Radio. Just go to RedlineRadioLLC.com or Redline Radio LLC on Facebook, or guess what? Redline Radio LLC in the Google Play App Store if you're an Android phone user. You can download the app. So, with that being said, thank you very much once again for checking out this episode. I'm going to get on out of here. I shall chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, stay safe and healthy. following has been a production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.